Chapter 45. First Citizen, more news, my friends, of swiftly swelling zeal. Re-entered citizens, ere passing down the ring, the Archduke paused, and gave the soldier's speech, enkindling them a sunrise a confronting throng of pains, that glaze a many-windowed east facade. Hot volunteers vamp in from ville, and plain more than we need in the furthest sacrifice. First, second, etc. Citizens, huzzah. Right so. Good. Forwards. God be praised. They stand up, and a clinking of glasses follows, till they subside to quietude, and a reparisal of newspapers. Nightfall succeeds. Dancing rooms are lit up in an opposite street, and dancing begins. The figures are seen gracefully moving round to the throbbing strains of a string band, which plays a new waltzing movement with a warlike name, soon to spread over Europe. The dancers sing patriotic words as they whirl. The night closes over. Act 4th, scene I, a road out of Vienna, it is morning in early May. Rain descends in torrents, accompanied by peals of thunder. The tepid downpour has caused the trees to assume, as by magic, a clothing of limp green leafage, and has turned the ruts of the uneven highway into little canals. A drenched traveling chariot is passing, with a meager escort. In the interior are seated four women. The Archduchess Maria Luisa, in age about 18, her stepmother the Empress of Austria, third wife of Francis, only 4 years older than the Archduchess, and two ladies of the Austrian court. Behind come attendant carriages bearing servants and luggage. The inmates remain for the most part silent, and appear to be in a gloomy frame of mind. From time to time they glance at the moist spring scenes which pass without in a perspective distorted by the raindrops that slide down the panes, and by the blurring effect of the traveler's breathings. Of the four, the one who keeps in the best spirits is the Archduchess, a fair, blue-eyed, full-figured, round-lipped maiden.
Maria Luisa, whether the rain comes in or not, I must open the window. Please allow me.
She straightway opens it.
Empress, groaning, yes, open, or shut it, I don't care. I am too ill to care for anything.
The carriage jolts into a hole.
Oh, woe! To think that I am driven away from my husband's home in such a miserable conveyance, along such a road, and in such weather as this.
Peal of thunder.
There are his guns. Maria Luisa, no, my dear one. It cannot be his guns. They told us when we started that he was only halfway from Ratisbon hither, so that he must be nearly 100 miles off as yet, and a large army cannot move fast. Empress, he should never have been let come nearer than Ratisbon. The victory at Etchmal was fatal for us. Oh, Etchmal, Etchmal! I believe he will overtake us before we get to Buda. First Lady in Waiting, if so, Your Majesty, shall we be claimed as prisoners and marched to Paris?
Empress, undoubtedly. But I shouldn't much care. It would not be worse than this. I feel sodden all through me, and frozy, and broken.
She closes her eyes, as if to doze.
Maria Luisa, it is dreadful to see her suffer so.
Shutting the window.
If the roads were not so bad, I should not mind. I almost wish we had stayed, though when he arrives the cannonade will be terrible.
First Lady in Waiting, I wonder if he will get into Vienna. Will his men knock down all the houses, madam?
Maria Luisa, if he do get in, I am sure his triumph will not be for long. My uncle the Archduke Charles is at his heels. I have been told many important prophecies about Bonaparte's end, which is fast nearing, it is asserted. It is he, they say, who is referred to in the Apocalypse. He is doomed to die this year at Cologne, in an inn called the Red Crab. I don't attach too much importance to all these predictions, but oh, how glad I should be to see them come true.
Second Lady in Waiting, so should we all, madam. What would become of his divorce scheme then?
Maria Luisa, perhaps there is nothing in that report. One can hardly believe such gossip.
Second Lady in Waiting, but they say, Your Imperial Highness, that he certainly has decided to sacrifice the Empress Josephine, and that at the meeting last October with the Emperor Alexander at Erfurt, it was even settled that he should marry as his second wife the Grand Duchess Anne. Maria Luisa, I am sure that the Empress her mother will never allow one of the House of Romanov to marry with a bourgeois Corsican. I wouldn't if I were she. First Lady-in-Waiting, perhaps, Your Highness, they are not so particular in Russia, where they are rather new themselves, as we in Austria, with your ancient dynasty, are in such matters. Maria Luisa, perhaps not. Though the Empress Mother is a pompous old thing, as I have been told by Prince Schwarzenberg, who was negotiating there last winter. My father says it would be a dreadful misfortune for our country if they were to marry. Though if we are to be exiled, I don't see how anything of that sort can matter much. I hope my father is safe. An officer of the escort rides up to the carriage window, which is opened. Empress, unclosing her eyes, any more misfortunes? Officer, a rumor is a wind, Your Majesty, that the French host, the Emperor in its midst, lands, Messina, and Bessières in its van, advancing hither along the Ratisbon road, has seized the castle and town of Ebersburg, and burned all down, with frightful massacre, vast heaps of dead and wounded being consumed, so that the streets stink strong with frizzled flesh. The enemy, ere this, has crossed the Tron, hurling brave Hiller's army back on us, and marches on Amstetten 30 miles less distant from Vienna from before. Empress, the Lord show mercy to us. But oh, why did not the Archdukes intercept the foe? Officer, His Highness Archduke Charles, Your Majesty, after his sore repulsed Bohemia wars, could not proceed with strength and speed enough to close in junction with the Archduke John and Archduke Louis, as was their intent. So Marshal Lannes swings swiftly on Vienna, without in its and Demont's might of foot, then Messina and all his mounted men, and then Napoleon, guards, cuirassiers, and the main body of the imperial force. Empress, alas for poor Vienna. Officer, even so. Your Majesty has fled it none too soon.
The window is shut, and the procession disappears behind the sheets of rain.
Scene 2, the island of Laba, with Wagram beyond,
the northern horizon at the back of the bird's eye prospect is the high ground stretching from the Bissamburg on the left to the plateau of Wagram on the right. In front of these elevations spreads the wide plain of the Marchfeld, open, treeless, and with scarcely a house upon it.
16. In the foreground the Danube crosses the scene with a graceful slowness, looping itself round the numerous wooded islands there. The largest of these, immediately under the eye, is the Laba, which stands like a knot in the gnarled grain represented by the running river. On this island can be discerned, closely packed, an enormous dark multitude of foot, horse, and artillery in French uniforms, the numbers reaching to 170,000. Lifting our eyes to discover what may be opposed to them, we perceive on the Wagram plateau aforesaid, and right and left in front of it, extended lines of Austrians, whitish and glittering, to the number of 140,000. The July afternoon turns to evening, the evening to twilight. A species of simmer which pervades the living spectacle raises expectation till the very air itself seems strained with suspense. A huge event of some kind is awaiting birth. Dumb show, the first change under the cloak of night is that the tightly packed regiments on the island are got under arms. The soldiery are like a thicket of reeds in which every reed should be a man. A large bridge connects the island with the further shore, as well as some smaller bridges. Opposite are high redoubts and ravelins that the Austrians have constructed for opposing the passage across, which the French ostentatiously set themselves to attempt by the large bridge, amid heavy cannonading. But the movement is a feint, though this is not perceived by the Austrians as yet. The real movement is on the right hand of the foreground, behind a spur of the isle, and out of sight of the enemy, where several large rafts and flat boats, each capable of carrying 300 men, are floated out from a screened creek. chosen battalions enter upon these, which immediately begin to cross with their burden. Simultaneously from other screen nooks secretly prepared floating bridges, in sections, are moved forth, joined together, and defended by those who crossed on the rafts. At 2 o'clock in the morning the thousands of coup soldiers begin to cross the bridges, producing a scene which, on such a scale, was never before witnessed in the history of war. A great discharge from the batteries accompanies this maneuver, arousing the Austrians to a light cannonade. The night has been obscure for summer time, and there is no moon. The storm now breaks in a tempestuous downpour, with lightning and thunder. The tumult of nature mingles so fantastically with the tumult of projectiles, that flaming bombs and forked flashes cut the air in company, and the noise from the mortars alternates with the noise from the clouds. From bridge to bridge, and back again a gloomy-eyed figure stalks, as it has stalked the whole night long, with the restlessness of a wild animal. Plastered with mud, and dribbling with rainwater, it bears no resemblance to anything dignified or official. The figure is that of Napoleon, urging his multitudes over. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.